When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Miami Nice.
Welcome to Miami Nice.
Woo! I'm your host, Blake Howard, a co-host, and this is...
I'm the partner, I'm Katie Walsh.
Oh my god, it looks like my microphone is coming out of Jamie Foxx's dick if you're watching the video of this podcast right now. So that's just the best place for this show to start.
Yeah, welcome... I think so. I think it's appropriate.
Welcome to a show that Katie and I decided to do because we want to talk about Miami Vice over drinks once a week, sometimes a room temperature mojito.
I forgot to make ice, so I'm having a toasty mojito, but I did grow this mint by myself, so
that's extremely impressive. I forgot limes. I got sugar, I got mint. I was like, I'm gonna make a syrup here, we can make something here, and I'm like, I was even gonna make a spice rum mojito, and I was like, nah. Didn't happen. So, well, what can you do? So,
one week we will get it right. 1 week we will have all the ingredients and it will be like, oh, we did it.
1 week it will happen. So, we got our blazers on, we started drinking, and we decided that, you know, Miami Vice, Michael Mann's 2006 questionable masterpiece, is the best place to start talking about movies that we love, but also that we can be completely puzzled by. Is that probably a good way to start, Katie, where we started? Because our love of talking about movies that are odd really started with you challenging me to talk about Den of Thieves as part of a conversation on Heat, which hurt me inside, but we did it anyway.
I know that like crushed you in many ways, but it was also a lot of fun to talk about. Like watching the movie was hard and talking about it was fun. This movie is obviously better than Den of Thieves, but
yes,
my favorite feeling to have in a movie, I mean, obviously is like, oh, it's brilliant, but my second favorite feeling to have is like where you're just like, what? And also I love this, and like this is insane but also brilliant, and like I like where all of your feelings are just roiling and you're like, this is like all of these lines are kind of stupid, but I enjoy them.
And it's like you got your tan in Miami. It's like, I wish I could be that hot with that hair to say that line and not for people to think that I was a complete idiot. Not to just be kicked out of a place. It's like right. You have to be that attractive, that confident, that mustache, and then you can have that conversation.
And it's sort of like this movie is like the embodiment of that spirit, that the Colin Farrell Crockett, just like bold, unapologetic,
kind of
cheesy, but also cool.
Yes.
I think that's like totally what this movie is.
I think it was funny the other day, I read a tweet from a Miami Vice stan and friend of the show, Bilge Ibiri, who said, I kind of love that feeling of watching a movie that when you're watching it, you know you love it, and most people are going to hate its guts. That. And I'm like, so it's weird, but like my experience with Miami Vice happened a lot like that. Like I went and saw it with my best friend at the movies, like day and date. It was opening night. I came out and I was like, had some cheesiness, had some stuff, but I'm a Michael Mann guy. So I was like, I love this. I was like, I'm in. I love it. He watched it. He was like, this is great. This is such a great movie. Well, like, what are we talking about? It's great. Great. And as we walked out, it's one of the only times we've ever been in a theater other than like a film festival where people were openly shitting on the movie, like before we'd even left the cinema. Like the line out the door was like, that movie sucked. Colin Farrell, what the hell is going on with his face? I didn't get it. Who was that character? What was this? What was that? It's like, that sucked. Oh my God, it's such a waste of money. What's time? I don't know. What was that ending? And I was like, God, people are pretty angry. And then obviously it's the budding internet at that time. So people are like only talking about it. And then for many years, it was just like, oh, one of the crap Michael Mann movies. But now it's like had this reemergence as this kind of exactly as you said, I think, which is like, it's got this masterful stuff, but it's also like, there's a cheese about watching it that's just so great as well.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I think right now, especially right now, it's having its like cult reappreciation. There's been essays written about it and people are watching it a lot more. I mean, there are like some diehard defenders of it online too. And like, you know, I dared to say that it was too long after watching the director's cut. People got very mad at me for saying such a controversial thing. This movie, the director's cut is almost 2.5 hours long, I just want to say. And by the way, theatrical cut is canon.
Yes. Yeah, I think we can say on this show definitively that I love the theatrical cut way more than this. Like, way
more. Yeah, there's like a couple things from the director's cut that I would like keep in the theatrical, but like, you got to have that opening.
The opening rules. It's so, so cool. When you've just got that like slow motion, go fast boats. And this is the show that's going to say the word.
That's the directors.
No, that's too slow.
Oh, yeah.
It's too slow. Like you're like, they're there and you see them in their suits and stuff. It's like, meh. It's like, I don't need to know any of this. Like that, that like complete like smash cut to needle drop Linkin Park / Jay-Z.
The audacity to have just Universal logo, black, needle drop to Numb Encore by Linkin Park and Jay-Z, which by the way, I listened to dozens of times to prepare for this. And then it's just like girl in front of a screen and it's like, what is happening? You're like, I don't know what's happening, but I'm really into it.
I think if someone doesn't begin my eulogy with a fade to black and then a needle drop to Numb Encore, then I haven't lived. I haven't really lived. Like, it has to start with that. Yeah, like, it's just, it's awesome. You get the vibes. You're in a club straight away. Like, it's a really immersive thing. And happens in TV shows a lot. Like, and I think, you know, we take it for granted in a show where you already get the characters, but it is like a mad TV show maneuver. You just like drop them. You drop the characters that we already know into a new place doing something cool, or they're undercover. Like there's been a million undercover TV shows, right? So you're just like, oh, they're doing something cool or whatever. But then what's awesome, so awesome about this movie is that they haven't done any of that pre-work. Like there's no preamble. There's nothing. It's like, you're going to get to know these folk on the fly with them doing what they're doing, and you either catch up or you get left behind, but the movie doesn't care. It thinks you're smart enough to get through it.
But also we do have a little bit, like even if you've never seen the Miami Vice TV show, like, you know, it's like Crockett and Tubbs and they're like undercover guys and the name is right there in the title. So you're just like, all right, like, yeah, I get it. They're doing their, you know, undercover thing. And like, all you need is just like a couple of those like establishing shots that he does. It's like,
here's like the boys team. On the phone, on speakerphone together.
Yes, I know they're listening. Hi, guys. You know, it's like you get your Dominic Lombardi. I don't know how to say his name. Like you get your Trudy with Crockett. You know, it's just like you're like, okay. You know, Justin Theroux has a tiny bit of technology. You're like, I get it. Like
yes, it's and that whole interplay between all those folk. It's like I'm all in. Like that moment happens, and then you see them, and then he goes and buys that drink and it's like, you know, you're just in. You're like, I feel like that's a moment where you're either completely in with a fade from black to Numb Encore or you're out. Like, it's like, totally. Am I in or out? And then when it's like, okay, I'm in guys.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah. You have me, you had me at Numb Encore. I'm ready for this. I'm so ready.
And you know, I feel like we've talked a lot about how much we love when Crockett goes to get the drink and he's laying these like shitty lines down on this poor bartender who, by the way, I've been a bartender in the Caribbean. Making mojitos sucks. Anybody who orders sucks. You're like, God damn it. Now I have to like muddle thing. Oh, just order rum and Coke. So anyway, but like, you know, he's like, where'd you get your tan? And she's just like, ah, oh, this guy. But she's kind of into him too. But now that I think about it, I'm like, should he be ordering drinks? Is this like part of the ruse? Or is it like just him being like, you know, like, you're on the clock, buddy. He knows.
And also, this is the question that I have. And this is a great question to start off this show. I actually think the two mojitos are for him. The gin and tonic is for Trudy. One of them's not for, it's not for Tubbs. I think yeah. that second mojito, I reckon he's doing sometimes what I do is I get home and I pour myself a spice rum and Coke with lime. And the first one is just down the hatch, baby. It's yeah. like, see ya. And then, okay, just now I'm going to be an adult.
Started.
Now that's just a aperitif. And then we get into drinking like a normal human being again. But like, that's the, like, that's that moment where he does that. It's just to show that he's a charmer. In the same way that it's to show how badass Tubbs is, like taking down like five security guards. Like one's introduced flirting with a waitress and the other one is like kicking 10 guys' asses in there. It's so, so awesome.
In the Michael Mann, like mythology of, you know, men doing jobs good, which is what all his movies are about.
Yes.
Because that's who he thinks he is.
He's it's like that manifest destiny, you know, that stupid saying, it's like don't fake it till you make it or whatever. It's like a fake it till you become it. Sometimes like people like put that spin on it, but yeah. it's like if you approach it like that and you're super prepared, then the thing that you want to come out in the work is all of that stuff. So yeah, like he's obsessed with that. He's obsessed.
But I was like who is the character in this who's like good at his job? And it's Tubbs. Like Tubbs is the guy
Tubbs is real good.
Gets this shit done.
Yes.
And like Crockett's good too, but he's a wild card. He's
complete
driving back card. From Cuba 2 days later. like walk of shame. Tubbs is like, where the hell have you been?
That's the fucking coolest walk of shame.
It ever. Is. It absolutely is.
In a go fast boat from yeah. Cuba illegally into Miami. Yeah. It's as badass as it gets.
Going like 90 miles an hour.
In this crazy boat. Yeah. No, like, but I think that that's what's good is like, man really balances with both of them. Is like that wild card nature of him, especially like at the beginning, it seems like it's a, it seems like, and I think this is where he's going is like one guy has to be like this glacial, like poker face. You can't do anything. And one guy has to be a bit of a nutcase because criminals are nutcases and they do crazy things. And so it's like this guy after hanging around on this time, he's like living life on the edge. Like that's him living on the edge. And it's what's even cooler about this is that like, especially if you've heard recent interviews with Farrell where he actually talks about Miami Vice, and there's a great one on the Ringer Podcast Network where he's like, I was so drunk, I can't really remember most of the movie. It was like, this is at a yeah. time when he wasn't sober. And so he's like, no wonder he's a wild man. Like all the choices he's making are under the influence, much like this show. Everything we say will be under warm mojitos or
questionable choices.
questionable choices or, you know, under the influence of alcohol. So like right. that's that whole crazy alchemy of like, there's this whole other thing happening. But yeah, no, I think that, man, this is like a flex for a man of like, you see in, it's almost like this is the Tubbs v. John Ortiz's character show. Like, you know, yeah. the crazy pig Jose Euro. Like, it's like, yeah. because Tubbs is the guy who's got the poker face. Tubbs is the guy who's coordinating the team. Tubbs is the guy who's doing that sort of stuff. And it's like, on each of their teams, they've got these wild cards, and you've got Isabella as a massive wild card, and you got Crockett as a massive wild card. So I think it's like he loves having those professionals around, but much in the same way when you've got like the action is the juice I'm in, like with Michael Torito and Heat, you've got these guys that are on the outside, or Belushi's character in Thief, you've got these folk that are on the tangents who are like, they'll cut a corner.
Yeah, totally. And I also think that like specifically for the work that they do, like you need to have Crockett be a little feral because,
yes,
you know, Montoya and Yarrow are like, yeah, okay, this guy is a transport dude. He's not a undercover cop. So he like kind of helps their cover because he seems totally untrustworthy.
Yeah. They're like, if this guy was a cop, He would totally get up to some shit. So we can control that. Like, we're good. Right. He's fine.
Yeah. They're like, with that mustache and that hair, I don't think so.
It's like at the bouncer. No. Not in those shoes. Not with that mustache in here. Get out of here, man. So people have been asking what the hell this show is, including folks that are actually on the One Heat Minute Productions Network. Like, what is this show that you and Katie are going to do? And I think the thing that we wanted to say that this is like, we're not going to go through Miami Vice minute by minute. We're going to talk about...
That would be insane.
Yeah. If we did that, commit us. You know when Jamie Foxx is like, are you in so far? Like, we clarify, I was like, you think I'm in so far? You think I'm like too deep? I've gone over the edge. Like, that would be us. Like, we'd have to have an intervention from friends. It's like, it's done.
We'd have our blazers would be just getting like ragged and sweaty, and we'd be all like haggard looking, just like 1:12.
Like, we both look like John Voight from Heat, like by midway in the show, like just a hot mess hard. No, but I think it's not going to be a minute by minute podcast. It's going to be we're going to tackle this movie in every way that we can. We're going to talk about characters. We're going to talk about actors. We're going to talk about accents. We're going to talk about drinks. We're going to talk about clothes. We're going to talk about the different versions of the movie. And we're occasionally going to have some cool people who may or may not want to spill the beans about their participation in parts of this. We're going to have cool guests who are absolutely those people that want to like strap us down and make us do minute by minute of this movie. But we really just want to come past every week and have a couple of drinks with you guys and talk Miami Nice about Miami Vice, because it is just so fun. Like, it is like such a deeply fun movie to talk about, whether you love it, whether you hate it, whether you love hate it, whether you like think it's completely fucking lunacy. It's a great movie because you can engage with it on so many levels and you can have so much fun doing it. And like, there, everyone is earnestly making the shit out of this movie as much fun or as chaotic as it is.
Totally. We're just having a blast, because I think that that's what enjoying this movie is all about, is just like,
yes,
kind of being able to laugh at it, but also being able to appreciate it and like see what's awesome and artful about it. And then also just being like, what's happening? And I think that like, yeah, we're just going to like sort of pick our favorite elements and just dive deep on those parts of it.
Yeah. I mean, there may be a whole episode on Jamie Foxx's fake orgasm. Like, there could be.
Anything is possible.
There could be a whole episode on Jose Yera, like John Ortiz's accents, like, because he's just so wonderful. There could be a whole episode on the line, I love disco. Like, there could just be a whole episode on that. Like, you don't know, and we don't. We might be three mojitos in.
Either. I mean, I desperately want to deep dive on this soundtrack.
Yeah, because it's as you, I think you said, this is my favorite part about doing a show with Katie, is that I get a text and it's just like, this soundtrack is crazy. Like, this soundtrack is crazy. And I'm like,
I mean, and the funny thing is, like, when you listen to Michael Mann's commentary, he's like got like specific reasons for every single song, and you're like, for that song
yeah,
Michael, and that's what makes it great. I mean, he has reasons for every single thing that appears, and you're like, okay, I'm just gonna go with it.
Sure. You're like, yeah, okay. I'm in.
Yeah, right. He's passionate about it, so we have to be passionate about it too.
Yeah, it's, and you know, there's always opportunities to be like, there's no more like a deliberate filmmaker in the world than Michael Mann. Like, I think I can almost definitively say that as like a guy who's making all the choices and being so close to every element of his movies as Michael Mann. Like, so fastidious and crazy and controlling, but that's what like the people who like partner with him, they love, is because they're like, man, I'm safe. Like, if I like the vision of what this is doing, I know that I've got the guy who's going to get me there. Like, they're in. So it's like, I think that's a kind of comforting thing, but it's also then, it also can be batty. Like, you look at the whole soundtrack, like there's a whole thing of like, if you dive deep enough, you know that he's referencing the pilot episode of Miami Vice and then having covers from new bands of songs that were in the original pilot cuts, because he had influence over like the song choices down to that stuff.
Right. So
like crazy shit that are like all ties back. And that's one thing that this show is not going to be about as much. We are going to talk about the Miami Vice show occasionally, but Katie and I are not doing a minute by minute analysis of the show. That's like too hard for us to do.
We can acknowledge that it exists.
Yes. We can acknowledge that Don Johnson looks better than any man has ever looked in pink pants.
True.
White shirt, rolled up. Like, I mean, we're going to have our blazers with our rolled up sleeves. Like, we're ready. We are ready for this.
There's some truths universally acknowledged, and like Don Johnson, Miami Vice, like, we're just going to acknowledge that as a universal truth. And the soundtrack, I mean, my God, the audio slave alone, my God, let me rest. Michael Mann. Chris Cornell is like wailing again. I'm like, Jesus Christ.
No, look,
I love Chris Cornell, but that, I just
and it happens over a couple of movies. Like the needle drops in Collateral are like bangers. You're like, oh, yeah, it's great.
Yeah.
And like in this movie, you can see why he's doing the same thing. It's like, is that the choice? Who knows?
It works for the vibe. It works for the unique vibe that it evokes, which is something that I both want to celebrate and sort of like poke fun of at a little bit. So I hope everyone's okay with that.
Yes. Like, look, there is nothing in this movie as ridiculous as Gerard Butler eating a donut in a crime scene in Den of Thieves.
No, there is not.
But we can enjoy some elements of this movie with the same amount of fervor that he enjoys that donut, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. The Miami Vice 2006 is our donut. We are chomping into.
And we're picking it up out of that crime scene and we're eating it up.
Yes. Heart.
And we're teasing people who don't wear blazers and will wear leather jackets. Just like Gerard Butler. But no, it's a cracker of a movie. And it's also, you know, I think the fun thing, we're going to like talk about it, we're going to celebrate it, but I feel unlike Heat or unlike other movies that I've done podcasts on or talked about or that we've talked about together, there's like a secret history of this movie that exists out there. Like, this movie has some history. And so we can't promise that that's going to come up, but if people are willing to like come on the show and talk to us about this, you know, we will talk to folk about it, because it's like it's a fascinating thing, because it's like this huge movie, this huge potential franchise in the mid 2000s, and people are excited and they're two massive actors and one of them's just recently come off Oscar. So it's huge. It's okay, successful. It's not a complete garbage fire of a flop, but it's just like they've made worse sequels out of things that have come out of television properties and things like that.
Yeah. Well.
And it's like, it's so funny that like, you see even on the press tours and you see them like, oh yeah, we had fun, and you know, the interviews and things like that. And they're just also super fascinating. So there's lots of like curriculum of funny interviews you can watch of Miami Vice where Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx tell the interviewer they had so much fun working together. And you're just like,
it was hurricane season. A security guard got shot. They were shooting in like Paraguay.
Yes. Like, tick, tick.
What else? Like, Jamie Foxx afraid of planes or something?
Jamie Foxx refused to travel internationally after the last security person got shot. They had to completely rewrite the end of the movie to end out of South America, which was the original ending of the movie, and like completely change everything to bring it back on shore into Miami. A whole bunch of things happened. And just the controversy is there in the ether. Like, it's out there. But I sometimes think that like kind of makes for, when you learn about it, especially when you learn about it like after the fact, that kind of makes for like really fascinating movies, because you're like, that's one of the things that's kind of scary good about this movie. And same sort of thing that happens in like the Coen Brothers' No Country for Old Men, is that some of the shots like outdoors on rooftops, like you said, hurricane season, there's like lightning happening in the background. There's just like amazing, just like pure cinema. You can't plan for like the lightning to underscore or punctuate a sentence, but it does it in this movie. And you get that. And then it's like, oh yeah, like that's Hurricane Katrina. You're like, holy shit. What?
Yeah. What? I mean, it's like, I think that element of it, like that kind of unrest, like really informs like sort of the tension of the movie, where you're like, when hurricanes happen, like the barometric pressure drops and everybody feels kind of weird and it's hot and still and the sky is roiling and you're just like, there's this element of just like unease. And like, I think that sort of exists throughout the film in a way where you're just like waiting for the other shoe to drop in some of these situations. And then it's like a tone poem. And like, I think Michael Mann made this, like, I think he was like, okay, I'm going to make this like very serious, like authentic movie about these, you know, vice cops in Miami, and then made this like this movie where it's kind of more of like a vibe and a mood and like an aesthetic, and you've got neon and water and clouds and like the plane flying across the cloud. And it's just, you're just like, oh my God, that's so beautiful. Even in the director's cut, like I think that the boat race is gorgeously photographed, but yes, totally narratively unnecessary. Like everything we learn in that scene is like, we can figure out if we're just watching it in the theatrical. But, you know, I think like it feels way ahead of its time. Like I keep forgetting that it's 2006 and, you know, just in the way that it kind of captures like atmosphere, but at the same time, like it is, you know, layered with all of this like authentic research and like, these are the gangs who would be doing this. And this is the history of this character. And this is the history of that character. And like, the references to the show. And so it's like a very rich text, even if like when you're just enjoying it, you're just enjoying it for like the surface pleasures.
Our friend of One Heat Minute Productions and author and screenwriter, Jordan Harper, he's got this great novel, an award-winning novel, in fact, called She Rides Shotgun. And when you read Jordan's novel, like he rattles off, like he's got an ex-con character and he rattles off all these LA gangs. And it's like one of those novels where you're reading it and you know, and you hear Jordan talk about it, like how much research he did to figure out all these like nuances, all these weird gangs and stuff. And it's like, that's a very Michael Mann thing. Cause he's like, especially when they're asking what the gangs are, what are they? Nazi lowriders, Aryan Brotherhood, blah, blah, blah. And so sometimes you have to actually stop, like, the benefit of like watching things on streaming or having them on Blu-ray or DVD, like you fast forward and you're like, okay, get the subtitles on. What the hell were all those gangs and where are they from? And can I Google them and stuff? Like, this is the kind of movie that this is. It's got so much like great stuff and there's great special effects and it looks good. And then but then in the next moment, it's like, you know, like let's ride to Havana. My cousin can illegally smuggle you in. And like, does that boat go fast?
Yeah.
It goes very fast, Katie. It goes very fast.
Yes.
It does. It does go fast. So it's just one of those things where that's what this whole damned crazy experiment of us talking about it is all about. It's just like, it is such a fun, that's what this thing is. That's what we want this show to be for you guys who are listening or watching. We want to be bad influencers. We want you to like have a drink on a Friday with us every Friday, throw on Miami Vice, have it go from fading to black straight into Numb Encore and just like have a few drinks.
Yeah.
Get in your like onesie leotard that actually has a hood on it for whatever reason and dance against a silhouette screen for your friends and family in isolation. And like listen to us talk nonsense about Miami Vice and occasionally have other folk on to talk to us.
Occasionally talk not nonsense.
Yeah. But in equal measure, there'll be some mostly not. Yeah. Nonsense. And then other times try and be, you know, semi insightful about some of the things, because I love this movie. Like I love it. Like warts and all, whatever flaws you may say in it, or if you're kind of religious about it, I love this movie. It's so fun. And it's so watchable too. Like it's one of those great ones that you can just throw on. It's rewatchable. It goes again and again and again. And in this movie, I think you don't need to focus as much, because I think you said put it perfectly and you're like, it's a bit of a tone poem. It's a bit of a hang. Like you just put it on and you're like, oh, okay, well the light, it's too light in here. And you turn the lights down a bit. You need to grab a drink. Okay, cool. I can sort of hear what's happening in the background here. I'll come in and cruise in and all right, yep, we're with Nicholas. Let's get started.
And it's so sort of like densely plotted and sort of goes crazy places that like, I think trying to understand every single tiny detail is not the way to watch this movie. I think the way to watch this movie is just to sort of like let it wash over you and like take in the aesthetic and the music and like the performances. But if you're just like, wait, which gang did which thing and who was the undercover and the info, like that's not the way to watch this movie. Just be like, yeah, okay, I'll figure it out by the end. Okay. That's kind of how I watch this movie anyway. I'm like, yeah, I'll just say they're like doing a shootout. Okay. Cool. Like I'm sure that everything will be fine.
Shootout fine. Jamie Foxx saying a cool line, like wearing sunglasses. I'm in. Exactly. I'm in fine. Yeah. Next. Talking about like, boats. Vector. Yeah. And you're like, I'm in. Whatever.
I'll figure it out.
Fine.
That all makes sense.
Yeah, it's the sense, you know, is the sense doesn't, it's not required. It's not a barrier of entry, I don't think, with this movie. I think it's like, if you're in for the hang, you get into it. And I think that people have come to appreciate it now, because like, it's so weird. Like, it's nearly 14 years since its release. So it's like kind of crazy, nearing that 15th anniversary. And it's like, it's now that people are just like, oh, this is great for that hang vibe. This is great for that tone vibe. This is great to look at Michael Mann's career, to have a look at where he was going, and sort of like watching that essay of like professionals, and some of it's about fame with Ali, some of it about infamy with Public Enemies. And then it's these guys, so it's kind of on the borderline of both. You need a guy who like looks like he's crazy and like a criminal and potentially infamous. And you need someone who's like completely like Neil McCauley Zen and undercover. And yeah, like it's one of those fun things. Whereas like some people like Public Enemies are like, oh, cool, it's like Heat, but like in the olden days. And it's like, no, like really Heat is, you know, Miami Vice. It's like Vincent Hanna is Colin Farrell, and then Neil McCauley is Jamie Foxx. Yeah. This is what it's like if they're partners, because they're going to work together. And those extremes of personality and that similarity is kind of that fun. And yeah, it's this movie is it's a barrel ass. And we haven't even got really to Gong Li. Like learning the whole movie, learning how to speak English phonetically for the whole movie, not really understanding anything. Right. Like, she's so wonderful. There's just so much to love.
Yeah, she's amazing. And I love on the director's cut or on the commentary, Michael Mann talks about how she and Colin Farrell took like 3 months of salsa lessons for like a 30-second shot of them dancing. I mean, then that just goes to like the sort of rigor of his own artistry and his craft, where he's
Eddie
like,
and I are taking 3 months of salsa lessons for this show.
Yes.
to eventually dance.
Eventually, at the very final episode, we will perform a dance on Zoom. Hey, I could do it right now.
look, you certainly could. I'd need to get your curriculum of YouTube dance videos to like.
Yeah, I'll send you a few. That's good.
But yeah, like, no, that's the kind of crazy. And also those two, like, or the three of them, actually, Michael Mann and Gong Li and Colin Farrell, like going to Cuba, like, although they didn't shoot in Cuba, like going to Cuba together, Michael Mann just like taking a camera and like taking photos of them in places as like sort of photographic storyboards. And there's so many crazy, there's like, that wouldn't happen in other movies. It just wouldn't. And it wouldn't like. And a studio is kind of, that's where he's unique. It's like a studio is not going to be like, yeah, sure, take a trip to Cuba where you're technically not allowed to go with Colin Farrell and Gong Li, because we're going to be totally fine with that. But Michael Mann finds a way to do it.
Yeah. It's also interesting because I think in terms of his career and his sort of mission, like this is a movie he's been wanting to make for 30 years. Like he wanted to make Miami Vice a movie when it was being pitched as a TV show, and it was already like, you know, had a deal to be a TV show. So it's like something that he's been like, you know, perseverating on for like 3 decades and being like, when am I going to get my hands on this? And like, you know, really do this story justice and like update it to the 2000s and like, you know, make it as contemporary as he could. And like, not like a sort of an 80s, like retro, like haha, cocaine cowboys, like kind of thing, or like Blow or the Infiltrator, you know, those like retro throwback movies, but being like, I'm going to ground this in reality. And like, this person is going to be cast like this race because in Paraguay, they have a lot of Asian people. And like, this person is going to be, you know, speaking this language, and this mural is from wherever the fuck it is. And like, you know, and you're like, cool, bro. I don't know that I like fully got all of that, but like, I love that you did that.
I just want to believe that like one screening once, it's actually Michael Mann himself in a disguise going, so what'd you think of the mural in the Jose Euro scene, to just like punters coming out of the theater, like the mural, like
glasses what? On, like loved that mural, very authentic.
It's like, oh, I saw one just like that in Haiti. It's like, yeah. Like, no, that's not what it
but
is.
But you can tell that like for him being like, I licensed this damn mural from Rio and I repainted it in wherever we shot this, and it's there for me, and that's all that matters.
That's like, that's why you love Michael Mann, because
right, totally.
For him, that was so vitally important. And you can totally see a studio head going, wait, you spent $20,000 to license a mural from Rio and you flew down there and then you flew the artist here to paint it in Haiti on a wall for like 5 days and I had to put them up. It's like, why does that need to be in the budget? And it's like, no, it needs to be there. That's why you go to a Michael Mann movie, because in there you're gonna be like, yes, of course.
Exactly what you were saying, where you feel like you know that like he has done the work, so you just like feel like held by that. Like you're like, I know that this is crafted in a way that is like going to be, you know, at the top of its level. Man's got to do a job.
He's doing a job.
He's doing a job.
And he's going to give you a big snuggle like Barry Shabaka Hanley. And it's just going to feel like you're just getting like this beautiful, hold me. Hold me, Barry Shabaka Hanley. Hold me. And you're just like, I'm in. This is exactly what we want. We want you guys to hopefully listen along and watch along. And if you're just listening along on the podcast, this will be in the One Heat Minute feed. You're listening in early May. And we're going to drop every Friday. And then if you go to oneheatminute.com, there'll be a little Miami Nice blog that you can see there. And every one of our shows will be there. And our video will be hosted there if you prefer to see our faces. So the people are watching.
Our drinks, our blazers, our drinks,
my finished drinks. Like, goddamn, I need more. I have to run away and get another one.
You should have ordered two at a time.
Good done. I heard you get your done in Miami.
So you know good. What? That bar looked really crowded. And so it is a smart move to like, once you finally get in, to get two drinks instead of having to fight your way back in. So yeah.
And I want to say RIP to Sydney's best mojito bar, which was actually called. So this is a deep cut for Miami Vice fans. So where he says, do you know a good place to get mojitos? Because she's like, do you like mojitos? And he's like, I'm a fan of mojitos. And she's like, La Baguita de Medio. And it actually means the warehouse in the middle, La Baguita de Medio. And she's like, and he goes, where is that? It's like Havana. And in Sydney, there was a bar that was called La Baguita de Medio. And they did savagely good mojitos, Katie. Like, freaking believable mojitos. And then they changed their name because no one could say in Australia La Baguita de Medio, because we don't have a big Spanish population, Spanish speaking, like in LA or in Florida. So they were like, okay, cool, we're calling it the Cuban place, because everyone in Oz just like, oh, the Cuban place, like,
yeah.
So they changed it to what everyone was calling it. Anyway, they would make these unbelievable mojitos. So they would have like stacks of like chopped lime, stacks of all this fresh mint, like huge amount of ice, like simple syrup. So it's just like sugar and water together. And they'd just be like hammering out these mojitos all the time. And when they first opened, they were like $10 a mojito. So you'd walk up with like a 20 and always get two mojitos.
Nice.
And they were just absolutely incredible. And it was also a dangerous place, because you just go up and like throw a $50 note down. Like if you flush from payday and you're like, five mojitos, and you go back to your table, no change. I don't need any change. Thank you very much. And you just sort of go back. And it's one of those things that was just outstanding. But goddamn, Sydney rental prices went up and they shut down. And I just always remember La Baguita de Medio, because I was like, I knew how to say it, because it was in Miami Vice.
You have to find that owner and see if that was like what the inspiration, you know, was for that. And
when I find him, he's going to be wearing a blazer and a t-shirt.
Yes. I'm almost positive.
I'm 100% sure. I'm 100% sure.
And it's getting to be summer, so make yourself a mojito.
And if you're in Australia, it's winter. Warm up with a mojito on a Friday.
Yeah, warm up with a mojito. I went to get rum today and the guy was like, yeah, mojito sounds good. I was like, he's going to make a mojito later. I could tell.
And so, you know, we'll do one. Some episodes might be a two mojito show. Some may even be three. And then Katie will cut us off. She'll be like, all right, Blake's cooked, guys. We're out of here. See ya.
I'll just be like on the floor. Like, we can't see her anymore.
Katie's fallen down, guys. We're out for this week. We'll catch you next
time. The episode. I'm like dancing to Numb Encore for the third time.
Oh, God. So, yeah, that's kind of all. We just even forget.
That's how we hope for this podcast to go.
Yeah. The best case scenario is that one of us is on the floor by the end of every episode. And if you can be on the floor too, we commend you. So yeah, this is Miami Nice.
Miami Nice.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.